This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
AI is making waves in every field it touches. President Biden is now on TikTok, and the election draws closer each day. With so much going on in the world, it is hard to keep up with it all, let me tell you. Hi, I'm Kai Ryssdal, the co-host of Make Me Smart. It's a podcast from Marketplace. And every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I break down the latest in business and the economy with short daily episodes to make it easy for you to stay in the know. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Little Gold Men, the award season podcast from Vanity Fair and Panoply. I'm Katie Rich. I'm here again this week with a second bonus episode of Oscar Predictions. We're here with Mike Hogan.
Hi, Katie.
With Richard Lawson.
Hello.
And with Joanna Robinson.
Hi, Katie.
So as you said, this is the second part of our week of Oscar predictions. We're going to kick things off with more of the technical categories and wind up getting into some of the acting categories as well as, drumroll please, Best Picture. But we're going to start with sound mixing and sound editing, which are perennially the most confusing categories for me. Joanna, it feels like you're going to be able to come in here and set us straight once and for all. What is the difference between the two?
As far as I can tell.
That's a great start to an explainer.
Sound editing is something that is a little bit more has to do with what is done on the set or around making the initial sounds for the film. And sound mixing is how you put it all together to make sure that you hear dialogue when you're supposed to hear dialogue and gunfire, strafing gunfire on a beach. Spoiler alert for my pick, when you're supposed to hear gunfire on a beach. So I think there's a considerable overlap here, but you've got like things like your Foley artists, you know, who make like the various sounds, that's in sound editing. And then, yeah, sound mixing, I think, has a lot more to do with balance, as you would expect. I just have to like look this up every single year. So
I wish they would just rename it, because editing sounds like mixing.
Sound effects.
Why don't they just call it best? Yeah, sound effects or sound creating
noises. Something. Best noises.
Best noises. Best noises.
Best noise maker.
All right, best noises.
So Joanna, given that, now that you fully understand the difference between the two, you mentioned gunfire on a beach. What are you going with?
Oh, it's got to be Dunkirk, right? Come on.
For both?
For both, yeah. I mean, is there a history of different films getting these two different categories? I feel like it's usually the same film, right?
It has been known to happen. Last year, Arrival won in sound editing and Hacksaw Ridge won in mixing.
God. Okay, mm-hmm.
And Hacksaw Ridge won at beating La La Land, which was kind of a surprise because sound mixing is the category where musicals can win a good bit. Les Mis won in that, Slumdog Millionaire won, kind of for the way that they're balancing like live sung on stage dialogue with the music, you know, just the idea of like being able to hear the singer over the music. But yeah, so war films are not a bad bet in any given year.
When one guy is recording all the bullet sounds in 70 millimeter, it's very hard to beat. It gives him a real edge.
I wound up splitting. I went with Dunkirk for sound editing because that's one of the, you know, the creation of the effects, like you're saying, the gunfire. And then I went with Baby Driver for sound mixing. I think I said in the last episode that it feels like kind of a spoiler in the tech categories and the way that it's balancing the music with the sound effects, with the dialogue. There's a lot going on in that movie. And I don't know. It feels like it could sneak in there.
I agree that if anything was going to spoil this, it would be Baby Driver. I just think that this is where they're going to be like, sorry, Chris, you made an amazing film. That's probably an all-time classic. So we'll give you some technical awards here.
But seriously, did he do it all analog? Like, was it similar to the filming where he did, or is it just like normal digital?
That's sound? A great question. I mean, yeah, I'll have to see what I can find. I mean, it's impressive sounding regardless. Although you can't hear Tom Hardy, which is a consistent problem in Christopher Nolan movies, which is part of the sound mixing. It's one of the things that consistently annoys me about his movies, but I don't know what the professionals would say about that.
Yeah, the sound mixing in Dunkirk is deliberately, I feel like, kind of like drowns out dialogue and stuff like that. This is kind of an arty choice, so I don't know, maybe. You know, four of these involve some kind of action on a beach, by the way, these movies. Baby Driver's the only one that doesn't.
If you want to learn more about this, Variety does have a piece on how Nolan captured the sounds of the battle. I'll just read the lead, which says movie audiences assume that the sounds on the screen were recorded during filming and that maybe a second person added big effects like explosions. In truth, that's both the misperception and the goal. So anyway, that's a teaser for this piece over on Variety if you want to read about it.
So Mike and Richard, what are you guys going with?
I am going to go with sound editing, Dunkirk, and sound mixing, Dunkirk.
Yeah, I'm the same, but I like your Baby Driver thing. I'm going to think about that, sleep on that one. I like the Baby Driver idea.
Yeah, I'm not even sure if that's going with my heart. It's just kind of, you know, hoping for a little bit of intrigue in these early categories and out in the night.
Dunkirk also has, like, am I misremembering? Doesn't it have, oh, that's in the score, isn't it? The, like, ticking sounds like you hear.
Yeah, that's
yes. Yeah, I think that's the score, okay. which we'll get to shortly. But first up is original song where Richard, I believe you wrote and performed This Is Me from The Greatest Showman, right?
Yeah, that's right. So I'm going to go out to the show. I got to get fitted for a tux. It's really exciting.
It's a sparkly tux, right? Yeah. With a big top hat.
Yeah. No, I didn't. Pasek and Paul did. And they won an Oscar last year. And so I feel like for writing City of Stars from La La Land. And I feel like, does that disqualify them, or would they win 2 years in a row, or is that?
Yes, I think they're going to win, and only partly because I sat with Keila Settle at the Golden Globes, right. And now we are Instagram friends and practically just pals.
Yeah, right,
your besties.
But I also did read a persuasive article that said, like, don't kid yourself. This is the only song that is actually like a big hit that a lot of people know.
Yeah, it's definitely made an impact. Like, people have listened to it.
I can't believe it took me this long, but like recently I fell down a rabbit hole on YouTube of like people doing covers of Greatest Showman songs.
Oh, wow.
And there are so many. And that movie's made $300 million worldwide. Like, it's a huge thing.
Yeah.
So I think you're right that like that, I just like, if they win, you'll hear a loud scream coming from Brooklyn, and that's me throwing something at my television. But not that I don't like the song, I just like think that they are a little bit overrated, but...
We'll do it for Keila. Root for Keila.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah.
I'm rooting for Sufjan Stevens for The Mystery of Love, mostly because I want to hear the phrase Academy Award winner Sufjan Stevens. Also, like, not just because I do like him, I do like that song, but also I think it will, like, really explode his indie outsider cred if he's, like, embraced by the mainstream to that degree.
As in destroy it?
Yeah.
You're doing this out of malevolence.
No, it's just sort of like, it'll complicate his narrative, which I like, so...
Okay. All right.
I'm just having a hard time imagining Sufjan Stevens standing on a stage in a tux, like speaking.
I know.
I've seen him in concert several times, but it just seems very jarring.
And Joanna, you're right. The Christian, maybe gay indie singer needs more complication to his narrative.
All right. Fair enough. All right.
Does anybody think Mary J. could win this?
I feel like just Mudbound is so, like, I mean, she's obviously like a big figure. She's nominated for Best Supporting Actress, but it feels like the competition is so big in the songs, and Mudbound is such kind of a minor presence. I actually wound up going with Remember Me from Coco, which is also written by recent winners, Kristen Anderson Lopez and Robert Lopez. And it's a really cute song from a cute movie that a lot of people love. It's not a big hit the way that This Is Me is, but I was kind of looking at recent years, like, you know, last year you have the Justin Timberlake's Trolls song, which was obviously a huge radio hit that lost to La La Land. Like, popularity doesn't necessarily equal win, and I just like the Coco song better.
I have to say, that's going to be a fun performance because I saw them do it live at D23. Like, Benjamin Bratt was up there, and they had all these, like, Oaxacan dancers out in the audience, and they were like...
Oh, they did, like, the big fancy version of
yeah,
it, not
and,
the,
and, like,
the, like, sad guitar one?
No, yeah, and, like, they were just, like, bright, colored dancer, and then like marigolds were falling from the ceiling, so it was just like an amazing.
Wow.
I don't think that the Dolby will let them drop marigolds from the ceiling, but it's gonna be like one of those like the Lego movie performance. It's gonna be like one of those crowd pleasing things. Obviously that will have no impact on voting, the votes will already be in, but it'll be a good show.
And then Sufjan Stevens will be replaced just by a fireplace burning on the stage
and Timothy just stares at him.
By the way, we should probably point out that I think Remember Me is the Gold Derby favorite for whatever that may be worth. So I'm going a little out on a limb here with This Is Me. But again, it's really just doing it for Keila.
The stealth success of Greatest Showman, I definitely think is something not to sleep on. And that'll be a really fun performance, too. I hope they bring out like the whole cast.
But how fun that like the performers are going to be like Sufjan Stevens, Benjamin Bratt, and
Mary J. Blige. And yeah, I hope Diane Warren just makes her way up there somehow. Let's do best original score. Unfortunately, there was not an original song for Dunkirk, as you know, they had Harry Styles right there and missed that opportunity. But you do have Dunkirk and score with Hans Zimmer, along with Phantom Thread, Shape of Water, Star Wars: The Last Jedi, and Three Billboards. There's a lot of just heavy hitters there. Like, it's just, I think maybe everyone but Johnny Greenwood has been nominated before. I went with The Shape of Water on the power of Alexandre Desplat and that movie. What are you guys thinking?
I'm sure you're right, but The Phantom Thread, a movie that I did not love, has by far the best music of any movie I saw this year. I mean, yeah. It's just like, it's just not even a question. So I'm putting that down.
That's the critic's choice, certainly, I would think.
Yeah.
I just feel like Desplat is kind of ascendant.
He's only won once, which I find very surprising for how ubiquitous he is. So it's not like he's over-rewarded at this point, though you can argue of whether or not this is one of his best scores.
Joanna's Heart is also voting for Johnny Greenwood. So,
Richard, what did you say that you were picking?
Shape of Water. I think that Greenwood, while respected, certainly, and it's cool when, like, Trent Reznor, like, somebody goes from rock musician to film composer, I just think that maybe that music is still a little too alienating for people, even though it's much more accessible than, like, his stuff in The Master or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he spent so long trying to get nominated, like, and I think he, like, kept getting disqualified for using existing music, which is a weird thing about this category. But yeah, it would be cool to see him win. Okay, so we're going to get into the animated documentary and foreign language film features, which are a tricky category for me personally, since I usually have a hard time catching up with all of these. But that won't stop me from making predictions. So let's start with foreign language film, which is a really interesting lineup, because I think the kind of the runaway favorite that I expected to be in there, BPM, which, Richard, I think was your favorite movie of the year, didn't get nominated. So we have The Fantastic Woman, The Insult, Loveless, On Body and Soul, and The Square. I'm really at a loss. I need you guys to tell me what to predict.
I'm pretty sure it's between A Fantastic Woman and The Square. Loveless
okay, that
is
seems
an
right.
unbelievably dark Russian film about people who are straight up awful. And I don't think that's that Oscar friendly. The Insult is quite interesting, but maybe a little bit simplistic, a Lebanese film. And the On Body and Soul is fine. But I think that The Square is super, super interesting. Swedish film about a guy who's like a chief curator at a big museum. Yeah. And basically it's a series of, among other things, it's a series of set pieces kind of exploring like the bystander effect. And the filmmaker talked to Emma Stefanski on our team for our special awards issue. Because it seems kind of misanthropic in some ways that one after another, you have these set pieces where people are in a situation, they don't know what to do, they could help somebody and they don't, basically. Yeah. And he said, which is interesting, he's like, we blame people, but ultimately, like, we're herd animals and we're scared. So that's what the film is about. It's dark, but really, really interesting, very funny at times, has Elizabeth Moss in it, so a little star power. And it's very, very, I think, really strong, maybe a little problematic in certain ways. But I think The Fantastic Woman has something very special, which is, even if it's not a perfectly constructed film, it puts a empathetic gaze on a trans woman and follows her through an incredibly excruciating ordeal. And I think it's transformative. It was transformative for me in a way, to be perfectly honest, in how I saw this character. At the beginning, I wasn't sure what to think. And by the end, I felt so much, I had just felt so much for her and couldn't understand why the world was, you know, messing with her. And I think that a lot of people have that experience and also want to celebrate that. That's my take.
Yeah. It's a trans actress playing her, Danielle Vega. And she's presenting at the Oscars this year. Yeah. They just announced. You know, so The Square has the fact that it won the Palme d'Or at Cannes, but that never really translates to wins it at the Oscars, or it rarely does. I think that Fantastic Woman, you know, if we're speaking about, like, movies that speak to the moment and, you know, feel very relevant to, you know, and will represent some kind of triumph for the Academy, for the film, I think that, like, Fantastic Woman is right there for you. And it has the added benefit of being really well made. So,
yeah, it is. Know. It is.
Yeah, I went with A Fantastic Woman mostly on the star power of Danielle Vega and the fact that she's presenting at the Oscars. That seems like a proof of its visibility above all. Although since The Square won the Palme d'Or, it feels like I can't tell how much of a benefit that gives that movie.
I just don't think that the conversion rate is actually that high from Cannes to the Academy. But I don't have it in front of me. But if memory serves me, it's not necessarily really a predictor of Oscars if it wins at Cannes.
Joanna, what are you going with?
Yeah. Una Mujer Fantastica. Absolutely.
Aha! Trotting out your fancy foreign languages in this foreign language category.
If not here, where?
I do think The Square could win, and I hope that if it does win, people, I mean, you know, it will be, it's something of a setback, but I hope people don't like overinterpret it as like that the world is horrible, because it's a very, very good film. But but I think it would be really nice to see a Fantastic Woman. It would be meaningful in a way that another award might not be.
Well, speaking of breakout stars in these categories, in documentary feature, I feel like the most visible film by far has been Faces Places, mostly because of Agnes Varda and her co-filmmaker JR and the cardboard Agnes Varda that went to the Academy luncheon. They're up against Abacus, Small Enough to Jail, Icarus, Last Man in Aleppo, and Strong Island. I feel like Faces Places has the buzz advantage to win. Do you guys give it that much credit?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that it's, you know, we've talked about this a lot on this podcast, but because the past has sort of supported this theory that things about filmmaking tend to go over very well with the Academy, and Faces Places is very much about filmmaking. It's very, well, it's about art in general, but like, you know, Agnes Varda is a, you know, been a director for decades, and there's a whole plot in the documentary about her and Jean-Luc Godard. And so I just feel like that's, it's kind of
Jean-Luc Godard, that rat. I think she calls him that.
She does. Yeah. She's wonderful. I don't think she'll be able to come to the show, but like, you know, she's a legend in France and beyond. And so I just feel like this is that movie's year.
It's also like, it's such a feel good movie. Like, I hate that phrase, but, if you follow me on Twitter, you've seen me like banging on endlessly about the new Queer Eye on Netflix, and mostly because it's just about like people going into communities where maybe historically they wouldn't be welcomed and being welcomed and connecting. And that's what, Faces Place is about, is like these two artists are going and talking to like factory workers and like whoever else, and just really having this connection. The working people of France just really embracing this artistic expression of their lives and their works. And I think it's really incredibly affecting.
And it's another sort of career award, and it's the oldest Oscar nominee ever. So they have that. It's easy to kind of check a box here apart from the quality of the film itself.
Christopher Plummer, who we'll talk about later, and Agnes Varda are both the oldest nominees ever. Like, they have both set records by being nominated the same year, which is pretty exciting. Okay, let's do animated feature, where we've got The Boss Baby, The Breadwinner, Coco, Ferdinand, and Loving Vincent. Coco's just going to win this, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, it's Coco.
Cut and print.
I mean, yeah. Like, there's been this weird resurgence. I mean, maybe I'm just, like, really too deep on, like, film Twitter or whatever. Like, just, like, this, like, actually Boss Baby is good thing.
I watched Boss Baby and did not think it was bad. The animation was way more interesting than I was expecting.
I read one article when it was coming out about this long thing by Darren Freinich, EW, who's a brilliant writer, about how it was basically just, like, this emblem of like capitalist moral rot in America. So like my opinion of the movie was swayed early on. So I don't know. I haven't seen it, to be honest. So, but yeah, I think Coco.
I'm Nomi Fry, and this week on Critics at Large, we're talking about the delights and shortcomings of the new movie Challengers. It starred Zendaya at the center of a tennis triangle and a very steamy love triangle.
Who are her loyalties to? Will she be tempted by the other one? How do these guys reckon their professional playing ambition with the romantic and sexual feelings about this mysterious woman? And such we have it. We have a conflict between three people in a game meant for two.
Is it a sports movie or a sex movie? Find out on Critics at Large from The New Yorker. New episodes drop every Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
So now we're going to get into some of the big ones, and we'll jump right into the screenplay categories. I wanted to start with adapted screenplay because that seems like the much simpler one to predict. You've got Call Me By Your Name, The Disaster Artist, Logan, Molly's Game, and Mudbound. And I think, as we talked about earlier, the reason that is kind of a surprising list is because it was basically Call Me By Your Name, and then no one really knew what was going to get nominated. And you've got James Ivory, who, like Agnes Varda, is a legend who is getting very old, and I think he's going to win his Oscar for Call Me By Your Name.
Yep.
Does James Ivory not have an Oscar?
No, he doesn't.
He doesn't?
No? Wow. All right. Let's get James Ivory that Oscar. Yeah, Call Me By Your Name. Come on. It's got to be that. You know, my Sufjan Stevens wishes aside, I think this is going to be like the award for Call Me By Your Name, right? To like honor the whole movie.
That Michael Stuhlbarg speech alone, I mean, we talk about the performance, but also like the content of the speech. It is a beautifully constructed film. and does seem to stand way out in this particular group.
Remember when the Disaster Artist was like potentially going to win awards?
Oh, yeah, I think it, I feel like it was definitely in a lot of people's like 10th and 11th spot for Best Picture, and you know, it got its nomination. And then you have Logan, Joanna, your beloved Logan, made it in there. But that like many of these feels like the nomination is the reward there.
Absolutely. I was like over the moon that Logan got nominated, but even Joanna's heart is not voting for Logan in this category.
Okay, so let's move on to Adapted, which is truly the most crowded, I think, of all of them. You got The Big Sick, Get Out, Lady Bird, The Shape of Water, and 3 Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. And yes, that is 4 Best Picture nominees up against The Big Sick, which is so charming and small. And I think I keep saying in another year might be able to win here. But I don't know, this like Best Picture has proven really difficult to predict. Does anyone feel confident about what's going to win here?
Yeah, it's going to be 3 Billboards, I think.
Hmm.
I just think he's won a lot of things. And people like that movie. They like him. You know, there are some people who see that movie as speaking to the moment with, you know, women fighting back against bad systems. So I feel like if we're talking about movies where like screenplay categories are their best chance of winning, like Call Me By Your Name, I feel like, I mean, obviously Frances McDormand is going to win something, but like,
and Sam Rockwell.
Oh God, that's right. So like, maybe, I don't know. I still think it's going to be 3 Billboards.
I think Get Out. I think Get Out, because I just think it's too, I think there is enough of a like question about whether this movie, you know, speaks correctly to the time or not, that it's going to hurt its chances. I could be wrong, obviously.
There's questions about 3 Billboards,
yeah.
Whereas you think Get Out, there's no question about it. Yeah, I mean, Mike may disagree with me when we get to our final category in this episode, but I think this is another case of like, this is the award for Get Out. Like, that's what I think.
It could be, but I think that, and look, Get Out has its own set of challenges. All these films have their own set of challenges, and Get Out is, it's a genre that doesn't usually win. And I do think people feel that it's not the most tightly constructed third act in the history of cinema. But still, I think that there's enthusiasm around Get Out, and there's sort of like anxiety around 3 Billboards, but I could be really wrong.
I mean, I suppose we shouldn't look at the screenplay category the same way we look at original song, but like, if it's like, not the catchiest script, but the script that's made the most impact on our culture, like the way in which people use phrases like the sunken place, or like, I don't know if you saw the meme that was going around after Black Panther of like Bradley Whitford being like, I would have seen Black Panther 3 times opening weekend if I could have, you know, like there is like phraseology from Get Out that has just already seeped into our culture. And that's like, that's why I think it deserves it, in addition to like all the other political reasons around it. Richard may be right. Right. McDonough is first and foremost in my mind a writer. So it like seems odd to me that McDonough wouldn't, you know, and usually his scripts are so incredible, you know, in as far as use of language and stuff like that. I just, 3 Billboards just, we know, didn't work for me. But
And when Nicole Sperling talked to Academy members about the film, they were like, hey, we're not blaming Frances McDormand or Sam Rockwell for the script. Like, the issue is the script. And the issue with the script is that he is a pyrotechnician of screenwriting, but in that he seems to have gotten a little too carried away and missed some of the human elements of a film. That's really essentially, I think, like the fair criticism of what happened here, and that's all in the script. So I think that given that when Nicole was calling around to Academy members, they were conscious of this whole thing. That's why I think that ultimately it would be weird if they then went and said, this is our favorite screen. This is our like historic go down in history screenplay of the year. But maybe they will.
Guys, Richard literally persuaded me to cross out Get Out on my ballot and go with 3 Billboards. Just because I think the preferential ballot has convinced me that 3 Billboards is going to really be dinged in Best Picture, but that doesn't exist in the screenplay category. And I think, Mike, you're totally right that there's a lot of Academy members who are aware of the problem in the script, but there's a lot of love for this movie, as proven by Frances McDormand and Sam Rockwell winning. And I think without a preferential ballot and a screenplay to kind of shake it out, I think it's just going to get the most votes. And especially because, you know, you can imagine people who love Get Out also loving Lady Bird or The Big Sick, and those, you know, they're not being like a strong one to put yourself behind in there. Yeah, I'm gonna go 3 Billboards.
I also think in a broader sense, like, that we shouldn't forget, you know, because we're steeped in a certain kind of conversation that a lot of Academy members aren't. I mean, this is the Academy that nominated Mel Gibson last year. Like, they are not quite as aware of these things. And I think that, like, Three Billboards winning so much stuff already this season, like, indicates to me that people are maybe not really hearing what some critics are saying about the movie, or they don't care, you know? So I don't, I think that, like, Nicole, I'm sure those people that she spoke to, you know, responded in good faith, but they were also directly asked a question about it. And I think a lot of people aren't being asked that question and aren't asking themselves that question.
Yeah, that's fair. And maybe it's all just preferential balloting, but I just feel like this is an Academy. 3 years ago, or even last year, it would have been obvious to me that this would win best screenplay because, you know, you think of older white male voters and this movie doesn't raise any flags for them. Just like it didn't raise any flags for me, to be perfectly honest, when I first saw it. It was only later hearing from people who were like, hey, this bothers me that you become conscious of this. But this is also the Academy that gave it to Moonlight, best picture to Moonlight over La La Land. So we'll see. It'll be interesting this will be a very interesting award to see, like, what is the constitution of this Academy.
It all of a sudden feels like the most political award in the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. in a weird way.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if Get Out wins the screenplay prize, I think that would be a really interesting indicator of how the rest of the night's going to go. Let's keep talking about Three Billboards and get into supporting actor, where you've got two actors from Three Billboards, Woody Harrelson and Sam Rockwell. They're up against Richard Jenkins and Willem Dafoe and Christopher Plummer of All the Money in the World, the most surprising acting nomination I can think of in a long time. Sam Rockwell has sewn this up over the last couple months, even though we kept saying Willem Dafoe had it all locked up. I don't think anything's going to change. I think it's Sam Rockwell. Joanna, I know you love Sam Rockwell and don't love him in this movie. Are you coping with your feelings?
I love Sam Rockwell. I do not love him in this movie. but I'm going to go with Willem Dafoe.
Ah,
listen, I won't be mad if Sam Rockwell wins because, you know, when you talk about career awards, when you guys were talking about Gary Oldman, like last week, last episode, I like the same is true of Sam Rockwell. I can just flash to 100 different brilliant performances from Sam Rockwell that I've seen and not get upset about him winning this award. But the same is true for Willem Dafoe. And I loved him in The Florida Project. So yeah, get ready for me to be wrong, like the next three categories in a row, but I'm going for Willem Dafoe.
I think that I love Sam Rockwell. I don't think I've been a fan of him as long as you have. And I think he's good in this movie. Like, for the problems that I have with Three Billboards, I think his performance really does a lot for that character that maybe the script doesn't. So kind of like Gary Oldman, it feels like a performance that's hard to argue with, even though I have, well, my favorite was Michael Stuhlbarg. I didn't even get nominated, but I wouldn't give it to him, but I can't be too mad about it. Richard and Mike, where are you landing?
I'm going to predict Michael Stuhlbarg wins because I think my write-in campaign, you know, he's not nominated, but, you know, I think I've convinced enough people that it's going to happen. But if for some reason that doesn't work out, yeah, I think there is a potential for a Mark Rylance beating Stallone surprise here. But I just don't think that everything I know about Stallone standing in the industry is not, I don't think that, like, Sam Rockwell has any issues in that regard. So, like, I think he'll probably...
Well, yeah. Everybody loves Sam Rockwell, right? Yeah. I mean, he's just like the nicest guy in show business, apparently. I don't know him or haven't met him, but that's what people say. And I also think at some level, this is going to depart from woke orthodoxy, but I think that what Hollywood sees in this performance and even in this film, white Hollywood maybe, is that in order for us to fix this total screw up of our society, we're going to have to find a way to forgive and redeem and work with people who disagree with us, like, fundamentally on things and may appall us and we find, like, revolting. And so to the extent that the performance and the role is a hopeful signal that, like, hey, you know, people can be really bad, but they also have the potential for good. There is a kind of a hopeful, optimistic aspect of life there, even if I think that the critique is valid of how the film handles it. So I think for all those reasons, like, he will get it, and Willem Dafoe's incredibly subtle, beautiful, haunting performance will be a nominee and a wonderful nominee.
Okay, let's do Best Actress, where, again, we've got Three Billboards running through the precursors. That's Frances McDormand. We've also got Sally Hawkins, Margot Robbie, Saoirse Ronan, and Meryl Streep. Again, I have a hard time arguing with a Frances McDormand win or with her performance in this movie, as many problems as I have with it. I guess I'm like all the other Academy voters who don't want to blame them for the movie. I wouldn't vote for her, but I do think she's going to win, and I'm looking forward to her speech.
I hope she talks about representation in Hollywood again.
Wait, what did she say about representation? Oh, about how she was talking about her agents.
Yeah, she was like, representation matters, long pause, and then start talking about her agents.
Was she kidding?
I mean, if she was, it was entirely deadpan. It looked like not a joke. I mean, Frances McDormand is a wonderful, smart woman who is politically engaged. Like, I'm not accusing her of being out of touch. It was just a hilarious coincidence of phrasing that just seemed odd. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I never thought I would say this. I'm kind of sick of it. I'm kind of sick of her shtick. I think she'll win. There was a point, am I crazy, where it looked like maybe Saoirse was going to surge ahead?
I mean, she was always in
Saoirse's there. Saoirse's my pick.
Saoirse surge?
I'm pro Saoirse surge. I'm team Saoirse.
Yeah. But no, I think that like all signs point to McDormand. And look, you know, it's been 21 years since she won. So it's been a long time. And she's, you know, say what you will about the movie, but she is good in it, you know, and she's one of the best actresses. So I feel like it's not undeserving.
I'm curious how often there have been that long of a gap between best actress wins, just because actresses, as we know, tend to have much shorter careers than men. So there is something, I don't know if she's breaking a record, and Katharine Hepburn probably did it, but it's encouraging to see that she gets to, you know, step up to the plate like this again.
And again, like coming back to the sort of the topical side of it, for to whatever extent that is relevant, you know, now the grieving mother is newly relevant after
oh God, yeah.
and all that cool. stuff. So I think that, I think she's going to win. I think it's a great performance. It is great to see two wins for an actress 21 years apart for somebody other than Meryl Streep. So I think, I'm not going to be mad at
Remember when we thought Meryl Streep might win? Like when we all first saw the post, and I mean, she's great in it. And it's hard to argue with it.
You New York elites did. Those of us out here on the coast.
The media nostalgists among us.
But yeah, but I'm planting my flag for Saoirse. I mean,
like, she'll win that Oscar. You know, I don't know when. I hope she doesn't go like the Amy Adams route and get nominated so many times it feels like it'll never happen. But, you know, she's what, like 23?
I can't believe it's the Glenn Close route.
Oh, yeah, Katie. I'm sorry.
Amy did it second. poor Glenn, overshadowed. Or Annette Bening route,
maybe. When Saoirse makes her Albert Nobbs, maybe that will be her opportunity to shine. So let's close this out with Best Picture. We have been talking about it for weeks and months and still maybe don't know who's actually going to win. I'm curious if anyone feels, like, confident. Like, do you feel like you have got it down and your prediction is going to be right?
No.
Richard?
No, I have no idea.
Well, you predicted Greatest Showman.
I don't think
which
the Post is
going
to win.
Yeah. Do we all have? Well, my question is: do we all have different predictions? Because we might.
Mike, I think you tipped your hand earlier. It sounded like you were going with Get Out.
Yeah. And I really don't know exactly why.
Was it because Anna is like so into it? Like the LA, our LA office has me half convinced about it.
Yeah, our LA office, and by the way, they are closer to Academy Ground Zero and they talk to a lot of Academy members. They say that they're, you know, Rebecca Keegan mentioned this on a previous episode, that there's a lot of enthusiasm for Get Out. Anna Raya, our executive awards editor, had said similar things, that there's a lot of people pushing for Get Out. I think that the Three Billboards lack of a director nomination says something. I think that The Shape of Water, despite definitely going to win director, does not have massive overenthusiasm. I think Lady Bird similarly, Dunkirk similarly. And when I start to look at the things at the bottom, per Daniel Joyot's, you know, how to actually think about preferential balloting, I think that The Darkest Hour is maybe, you know, maybe those votes end up going to Dunkirk or Three Billboards. But then I think the Post votes could easily go to Get Out because it's sort of like an inspirational, in other words, just to quickly explain for our viewers, our listeners, in case they don't recall, when a film gets eliminated as a first place possibility, as a winner possibility, the second place votes are then become first place votes for those films. So if I voted for The Post as number one and Get Out number two, then all my number two vote becomes a number one vote for Get Out.
Assuming that The Post would get lower votes, which it will.
Yeah. So The Post, Phantom Thread, Call Me By Your Name, those next three movies, if they get eliminated, they start to feel like, to me, movies where Get Out is number two. So I don't know that. And then I think Get Out will have a lot of number one votes because I do think there are a lot of people who really, really want it. And a lot of people who might otherwise have voted for Lady Bird are basically not splitting, intentionally not splitting and going like, this is the one that has a chance. That's my assessment of it. But what the hell do I know?
That Lady Bird point is really interesting. And I feel like if I were an Academy voter, which I'm not, and probably not a useful exercise, but I think I would do exactly what you're saying, Mike, is I love Lady Bird. It's my favorite movie, but I think I would probably give my vote to Get Out because it feels like it's got a chance at this point, which I think even a few weeks ago, it like didn't feel this confident. I'm not sure where this Get Out resurgence has come from other than just Universal spending a lot of money on it. But that feels really possible if there are enough voters thinking like we are.
And with that kind of introduction, I would like to announce that I am still.
Yeah. Is this strictly going with your heart or do you feel like there's some possibility there?
I could concoct some sort of reason why it's a smart move, but I don't think it is a smart move. It's just, you know, like what, like if you're not going to root for the film you loved the most to win Best Picture, you know, what are you even here for?
Richard, what are you going with?
I'm just kind of marveling. It's amazing I don't like fall prey to like more con men in my life because like what Mike just said, I'm like, I'm convinced. Like, and I was convinced when Daniel came on the podcast and said it was going to be Dunkirk. And, you know, I just like, I'm like, yes, okay. I think that's reflective of this year where it's like, it's been so up in the air. But no, I think Mike makes a compelling point about what the lower voted movies, what the number twos would be, which, as you know, we've talked about. The theory is that's how Moonlight won last year. I think that's pretty compelling. It's between Dunkirk and Get Out. I can't even make a prediction right now. I know that's like cheating.
I actually am going with Get Out too. So, Joanna, I'm sorry that we've left you on Lady Bird Island.
But like nobody's going for Shape of Water, which is the like favorite.
I know. What's happening to us?
I don't know.
We might be overthinking.
Well, but there's a recent history of director and picture splitting, and I think that's because of the preferential ballot thing. And I think that Del Toro is going to win. So,
and I literally have met one person who's like, "Oh my god, I love Shape of Water."
Yeah,
that's what seems to be lacking. It's clearly there are people who are very enthusiastic about it, but it doesn't seem to have that sort of like booming enthusiasm.
Well, this is really exciting. I expected us all to be like Shape of Water, Three Billboards, and me to be like, here's my weird pick, Lady Bird. But you guys are, I love the Get Out enthusiasm. I will stay on Lady Bird Island, but I'm really excited about our probably terrible predictions here.
I have become really convinced that Three Billboards will not win. I think thinking a lot about the preferential ballot in the last few weeks has persuaded me that it's too divisive to get there. And that's a really interesting thing to think of going forward and to think about how La La Land did that. But I don't know. I mean, I guess if it wins, then we have to rethink our wisdom all over again, which is what we did after Moonlight won. So who knows? So that does it for our Oscar predictions. Please take this advice as you will. If you lose a lot of money, do not blame us. We probably have too. We'll be back with an episode airing on Monday, right after the Oscars. We'll be catching up on everything that happened. And so you can tune in to catch up with us after we've survived what is hopefully going to be another exciting award show, though maybe not as exciting as last year when it was a little terrifying at the end of there. Hopefully all the envelopes go where they belong. In the meantime, you can find us at VanityFair.com. Lots and lots and lots of Oscar coverage. Mike, do you want to plug the live stream one more time?
Yeah, please come to VF.com and all of our social channels, Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat, Facebook, all throughout Oscar day and night and early morning. And then as soon as the Oscars end, on VF.com and on Twitter, I will be co-hosting a 90-minute show from the Vanity Fair Oscar Party Red Carpet with Kat Sadler. She is going to teach me how to behave in front of a camera, and we're going to interview a lot of people, have some really interesting conversations. Hopefully someone will totally screw up an award and we'll be able to talk about that. And so I'm really excited. So would love it if the Little Gold Men faithful would support us through this, because I am going to probably die in the middle of it.
Yeah, and if Mike doesn't come for our post-Oscars episodes, because he's signed a deal to replace Ryan Seacrest on E! Going forward. So congratulations in advance. Anyway, keep tuning in us at Little Gold Men. Follow us all on Twitter. I think you all know where to find us all on our own. We'll talk to you after the Oscars. This episode was edited and produced by Daniel Roth. And this week's award for the best description of what it feels like to try to predict Best Picture this year goes to Mike Hogan.
But ultimately, like, we're herd animals and we're scared.
The Run for Revogue is where you'll meet all the most exciting people in fashion and culture.
I am Fran Lebowitz, who should be the mayor of New York.
We all support that.
We support that.
Very nice.
Nikki.
Yes.
It's been really great being in this beautiful pink room.
All right, Usher, can you hear us?
I can hear you.
All right.
Can you hear me?
We can.
We can.
All right, here we are.
On the podcast, you'll learn how Vogue really works.
Sometimes we'll come in for a second or even third run through until we are AWOK.
Can you tell us what AWOK means?
It means AWOK, Anna Wintour OK.
I'm Cho Minardi.
And I'm Chloe Mel.
And we're the hosts of The Run Through with Vogue, where fashion and culture collide.
Join us. It's AWOK.
Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.